morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, Robert Knott is going to be here speaking of the arts. Right now, it's my great delight to welcome Peter Bull. He is the director of the Pacific Northwest Ballet Company and longtime ballet dancer with the New York City Ballet and the Pacific Northwest Ballets, performing tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 at the Lenzic Performing Arts Center right here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thanks for getting up so early. You grew up outside of New York City and saw the New York City Ballet, and at the age of 9 said, I want to do that.
Yes, my parents were subscribers to the New York City Ballet, starting when 5 years before I was born, actually, and then started bringing my sister and I to the ballet. And it was something that was in our family history and something that I quickly fell in love with.
Did you have dancers in your family?
No dancers, just ballet fans.
And so then you came up through the ranks of the New York City Ballet.
I did. I was there for 22 years in total, and most of them as a principal dancer.
As a student, I mean, those were the golden years of George Balanchine and Jerome Robbins, and although you probably didn't work with them that closely, that atmosphere of their work and their incredible artistic power and influence must have filtered down to you.
Yes, I mean, even as a student in the official school of the New York City Ballet, the School of American Ballet, you could feel their presence constantly. When they'd walk in the building, there'd be this hush that would run through the students. And there were many opportunities because students performed in ballets with the company, mostly the Nutcracker, but even a Robbins ballet called Mother Goose that needed boys in it. And so there were opportunities to work directly with Jerome Robbins and Balanchine, even as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old.
And what was that like?
Well, my work with Robbins was actually interesting because this role that I played of Cupid, you were the scout that had to lead Prince Charming to the fairy princess, and I thought it was just, you know, you walk across the stage and then you shoot a bow and arrow and you're done. But Robbins had a whole character that he wanted me to develop. He said, when you're walking, you have to think you can't step on a twig, you can't snap a twig, because that would then wake up people in the forest. So all of this sort of ideology behind a character's role, even, I think I was 10 at the time, but it was really the perfect introduction to how Robbins treated his ballets and his dancers' roles in those ballets.
Did those two choreographers treat different dancers differently? In other words, they would, little you or adult dancer, somebody else, they would teach them the part or lead them through the part differently depending on that own dancer's style and character?
Well, I think every dancer was treated as an individual. It felt, at least in the world that I lived in, that every dancer was treated with the same amount of respect, which also goes to say that when there was anger at a dancer, it could be to a dancer at any rank or any seniority. But everybody was so deeply involved in this. I mean, all of New York City was so deeply involved in what the New York City Ballet was doing, and you could feel that importance in the daily work.
One of the things that is amazing about the ballets of both of those choreographers, and I mean, ladies and gentlemen, grew up going to the New York City Ballet myself. My dear mother had a subscription and took me throughout my childhood and teenage years, and so I was privileged to see the ballets that you, Peter Bull, danced in from an early age. And one of the things that is so striking about them is the incredible deep unity between the movement and the music. How was that taught to you? I mean, on the other end of the spectrum, you see ballets where you can practically see the dancers counting to four.
Right. Well, I mean, I think Balanchine was a musician first, and he played the piano beautifully. And I think he had this respect for the orchestra, which was phenomenal. And I think he looked for projects for the orchestra's fulfillment as well as for the audience fulfillment and the dancer's fulfillment. And I think in our training at the School of American Ballet, there wasn't an option except to be led by the music and to be guided by the music. I mean, the music really created the choreography. And I think that was Balanchine's concept, and it was passed down to every single student in the school.
And so you learned that. I mean, did they specifically teach you things about music that they wouldn't in a normal ballet class?
I think they taught you things about timing. We had a brilliant teacher named Stanley Williams, and oftentimes he would just have the first beat played and maybe the fourth or fifth beat played, and he would have the leg create the other notes. So during the silence, the leg would have to punctuate. And there was a sense of how your body was the visual representation of the music. And that teaching carried a generation of dancers through the New York City Ballet.
What were your favorite, once you became a member of the corps and then quickly a principal dancer, what were your favorite ballets to dance?
One of the first roles that I danced was The Prodigal Son, Balanchine's ballet that he created when he was 24. And I think one of the reasons that I appreciated it so much was I went into it as the first person to go into it without Balanchine's guidance. Balanchine had died 2 years prior. And
he died right exactly at the time that you were brought into the company.
I know, worst timing. I got in the day that he died.
He
was the one that I really yearned to work with. But when I was working on The Prodigal Son, they weren't sure who would coach it. And Jerome Robbins came forward to Peter Martins, who was the director at the time, and said, I was the first Prodigal Son with the New York City Ballet. Balanchine worked with me. Would it be okay if I coached him on the role? And Robbins almost never worked on Balanchine's repertoire. He only worked on the Robbins repertoire. So he and I went to a studio alone for about 2 weeks and just went over every detail, every piece of the storyline. And it really was a wake-up call for me to realize that ballet was could be half-acting as well as the dancing. That sort of opened a lot of doors for the career.
So a lot of the ballets that Robbins and Balanchine choreographed were not storytelling ballets, but then some of them were, and learning to act that narrative, that's also not really part of the ballet training, at least at first.
It's really not a part of the training. I mean, it's sort of on-job training. You get it. I think the Robbins ballets, there's always the essence of a relationship on stage with either any of the other dancers, but certainly the romantic relationship, the playful relationship. So that acting probably played more into the Robbins rep. And Balanchine rep, of course, they're the spectacular full lengths, but mostly more abstract ballets.
And so The Prodigal Son was one. What are some of the others that, first of all, that you loved to dance, but also that brought you forward artistically?
Another one early on in my career was Oberon in A Midsummer Night's Dream. And just to know your role in storytelling, and of course that's an evening-length ballet, so where you come back, and I remember trying to work on the acting where there's this dispute with Titania, and I had a friend in the audience, and she said that her daughter started crying because the mother and the father were fighting so much over the kid. So, you know, learning when to pull it back and that it's a family show and it doesn't need to be that angry. So, but those experiences, and the nice thing about the New York City Ballet was I must have done Oberon at least 100 times over the course of my career. So you really get to gel in a role, understand a role, and then feed off of other people. I think I had probably 10, 12 different Titanias over that time period. But just realizing there's different chemistry every time you go out on stage, and you never reach a point where you've arrived. It's constantly evolving, and that's part of the great thrill of the whole profession.
We're speaking to Peter Bull, and his Pacific Northwest Ballet is performing tonight, Friday, and tomorrow, Saturday, at the Lenzic Performing Arts Center in Santa Fe at 7:30 in the evening. So after Balanchine died, Jerome Robbins was still there for another 15 years, and then he passed on. There's a quotation by, I don't know if this is true or not, but I think it is, Miles Davis, years and years after he'd made the album Kind of Blue, somebody came up to him and said, I love that album. And he said, yeah, you should have heard it when we made it. And it's the same, but it's not the same because times have changed. And how does that work with ballet? You're performing ballets now after they were made, after their creators are gone, in a different era. How does that change things? Or do you try to keep it just the same as it used to be?
Well, I think, you know, the Balanchine ballets seem to stand the test of time beautifully. New casts seem to discover the essence of the ballet. Coaches are around to help, but really I think the choreography reveals itself quite well to new casts and also to audiences. The Robbins ballets have probably had the biggest shift because Robbins was on top of them as such a taskmaster, rehearsing them so meticulously, and I think that's something that shifted quite a bit. It's hard for someone to walk in that's not Jerome Robbins and make those demands. Robbins Ballets received probably three times the rehearsal that Balanchine Ballets received. But that may have been a slight shift. And I think really everything has a relevance to its time. It's amazing when it's a classic, it's relevant. Obviously, we're revisiting Shakespeare constantly, and you revisit Balanchine's Agon constantly, and it's not dated, and it's not a piece that is not relevant.
Do some of them stand the test of time better than others, do you think?
Yes. I mean, Balanchine's famous quote was, ballets are like butterflies, and they're beautiful while they're there, and one day they're gone. You know, ironically, Balanchine was wrong. His ballets are not butterflies. They're enduring, and they're there for future generations to appreciate.
They're pyramids.
Yes, pyramids, better analogy.
We're talking to Peter Bull. So you, in addition to doing ballet, started at some point exploring other kinds of dance. Tell us about that journey.
Really, at the invitation of a friend, Wendy Perrin, to work with her on a much more modern dance-based solo, and a great experience. And then I was attending a lot of modern dance, mostly at the Joyce Theater in New York City, and I ran into Melissa Fenley, whose work I had admired. So I started doing this work outside of the ballet environment and found it very fulfilling, and then it led to sort of a second chapter in my career.
And what was the nature of that second chapter? You didn't stop dancing at New York City.
No, I did everything at the same time. So I would, when I had time off from the ballet company, I would run to work with Melissa, and then we'd do a presentation at the Joyce during a New York City ballet layoff. But it was the last 10 years of my career, I was sort of moonlighting as a modern dancer, which was ironic because I was known as one of the most classical dancers. But I found this very fulfilling. And then eventually I formed a small company called Peter Bull & Company, and that presented commissioned work with a group of, at most, I think we were six dancers.
And what mixture of modern and classical was your company?
Well, it was really, it depends on who makes the call, but I'd say it was really leaning towards modern and contemporary. Basically, these dancers that I worked with, I would ask them which choreographers they had always wanted to work with, and they would give me a wish list, and then we'd head out and find them and ask them if they would work with us. And it was sort of like just cutting to the chase with no middleman. Nobody made any money, but there was great artistic satisfaction in the projects.
That's amazing, just to have the chutzpah to say, okay, I'm going to ask any choreographer. And they would say yes.
Well, they would say yes because the dancers were so talented, and the dancers said, I'm in this 100%. So there wasn't any of the red tape that sometimes can kill projects.
What was it like to learn? I mean, was it learning a new vocabulary of dance for you?
Well, I should have. I mean, I should have trained in, I'll call them classical modern techniques, but I didn't. I just imitated. I worked side by side with Melissa Fenley, and we danced the solo side by side day after day after day, and I would just imitate as best I could.
What's the difference between imitating and being trained?
Well, I think I went at it blindly, in a sense. I didn't have somebody saying where the origin of the step had come from. I was just trying to execute the finished product.
Interesting.
And the irony was Melissa rehearsed without her glasses on. She couldn't see very well, so she'd give me corrections, not really knowing what I'd done and what I hadn't done. So
at a certain point, dancers retire, usually sometime, in their 30s?
I think if you're lucky, you go till 40.
And so where did you go? I mean, at a certain point, you left the New York City Ballet altogether.
Yes, I retired just before my 40th birthday, and I retired because I received this new position in Seattle as artistic director.
So that's a huge thing, moving to the West Coast, moving to Seattle. What was that like for you culturally?
You know, when I got there, I realized that I should have been born in Seattle. It just was more suited to me. But Seattle's an amazing place, and I loved everything about it. I do love everything about it. And my family, too, his wife and three kids, and all of them have sort of embraced Seattle as Seattle has embraced us.
So you came into a company there, the Pacific Northwest Ballet, where I guess the previous co-directors had been there for almost 30 years.
Yeah, 28 years, and they had done an amazing job just building the perfect foundation and really setting up this plateau from which a new director could move. And it was a great system to inherit.
So it was different from, I mean, Peter Martins inherited the Balanchine, and it's like, that's the ultimate hard act to follow. For you, it was a different thing, the way the metaphor of the plateau, you were welcomed with open arms.
And also the big difference is the former artistic directors, Kent Stoll and Francie Russell, were choosing to step down. So they were also there, and they still are there helping me and guiding me. And there's a sense from the public that this transition is smooth and beneficial to the institution. And you know, Peter Martin's inherited this company without Balanchine and without that sort of mentorship.
What is the training of young dancers like it in your new place in Pacific Northwest? In other words, do they have a school like the School of American Ballet in New York that feeds the company?
Yes, we do actually. And the caliber of the students has gotten to such a level that I'm drawing predominantly from that school. I took 6 apprentices from the school for this current season. So very proud of them. One of them was a Princess Grace Award winner this past year. So they're getting national and international recognition.
What is the training of dancers like now as compared to when you were coming up through the dance world? I mean, I remember when I was a teenager, I studied ballet for a while as a young person, and dancers smoked and drank coffee.
Right. There are very few that are smoking, which is a real change, because certainly when I was a student, everybody was smoking. And we'd call a 5-minute break in rehearsals with New York City Ballet, and everyone would just sit right there on the floor and start smoking. Choreographer smoking, pianist was smoking, and it was a nightmare. So that's gotten better. But I think as far as the training, we've now, at Pacific Northwest Ballet School, we've incorporated modern jazz periodically, character dance. So there's this recognition of many styles and this attempt at the fusion of many styles, because it all really falls into classical ballet now.
Meaning what? Classical ballet draws on all those other things? In other words, there's not as much pure classical ballet choreography?
I think it does draw on those other things. I mean, all of our choreography by Nacho Duato, we do 2 works by Nacho Duato, we're working on a third, but it's all barefoot or slippers. It's very grounded deep into the floor, and the modern training just helps that tremendously.
And dancers are still trained on point as
yes,
much as they were.
Yes, point and variations and all of that. It's just more. It's not less of anything.
So is it more rigorous for them coming up?
I think it is. I mean, just this past year we have our 8-year-olds, and we just moved them from once a week class to twice a week class. So I think the number of classes is increasing. And students tend to hunger for that. They tend to be committed at a very young age, and they want more classes.
I suppose for ballet, just like for any other art form, it's a calling that strikes people at a young age, as it did you.
Yes, I mean, I started when I was 9, and I can't say I was terribly interested until about 13. And by 13, it was the thing, it's all I could do. I wanted to be around people that danced. I wanted to have pictures on my walls of dancers. There's no turning back.
And are there many, is it the same thing as when you were young, way more girls than boys are interested?
Yes, my first class, I think there were 20 girls and 3 boys. And that was pretty typical. Now we have a program where we go into public schools. It's called the Dance Chance Program. And we audition all the 3rd and 4th graders in these lower income schools. And this year we took 60% boys and 40% girls. So that's a nice shift to see.
And so that gives these young people a chance who probably wouldn't have even known that they wanted to do that.
No, and most of them, their family doesn't speak English as a first language. So we're really introducing a family that is new to the country to an art form. And they're amazing kids. They're talented, and we give them scholarships and give them dance clothes and teach them how to put their hair up in a bun and everything. Actually, one of the apprentices I just took was a product of that program, the Dance Chance Program.
How long has that been going on? Have some of them worked their way into the company?
Well, Eric is the first one, and he's been studying for 12 years. And the program's been in existence for 14.
So what is the program tonight? I guess it's very much of a New York City Ballet type of program.
It is, and part of the reason is in conversation with Meryl Brockway, who's terrific and lives here and responsible for all the Dance in America series.
Yes.
These are some of his favorites, and we wanted to do what Meryl wanted. So they're also in our rep, and we're very proud of them, and they're part of my heritage. So we're going to open with Jerome Robbins In the Night, 2 Chopin Etudes, and that will be, we've brought our pianist Diane Children to play that. 6 dancers, and then the second piece is excerpts from George Balanchine's Jewels, 2 from Emeralds, 1 from Rubies, and then a beautiful Pas de Deux from Diamonds, created for Suzanne Farrell. And then we close the program with Balanchine's really classic, groundbreaking contemporary work, Agon.
How old is Agon? When was that choreographed? Do you know?
Yeah, I do. It was 1957, so it looks great for 51.
Peter Bull is the artistic director of the Pacific Northwest Ballet Company, and the company, which has 51 members, but they're not all in Santa Fe. How many people do you have here?
No, we brought 13 dancers here.
13 dancers, and so they are based in Seattle. Do you do a lot of touring?
No, we almost never get on the road, which is unfortunate, and that's sort of a product of time and finances. We've been to Vail, Colorado the last two summers, and we'll be going to Jacob's Pillow next summer. But basically, we're in Seattle.
Do you do do you do choreography as well?
Very rarely, only like special occasion pieces, because there are better choreographers out there than me, so I try to find them.
And so you're commissioning choreographers, basically whoever you are.
Yeah, we just commissioned two works from Twyla Tharp that premiered 3 weeks ago. So we're aiming high.
Peter Bull, it's just about time to go. Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Just that we hope to see you at the Lensic tomorrow night and Saturday night.
Have you been rehearsing on that stage? It's quite an amazing stage.
We rehearsed at the NDI studios yesterday, and today we'll rehearse on stage.
Well, we look forward to seeing you there.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Peter Bull is the artistic director of the Pacific Northwest Ballet. And once again, tonight and tomorrow, 7:30, Lensic Performing Arts Center. And the telephone number over there is 988-1234. 988-1234. Robert Knott is going to be with us in just a moment. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasa Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and he's with us here just about every Friday speaking of the arts. Welcome, Robert.
Buenos dias.
Alegría.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. There's some new art on the wall here, I see.
I want to have these people on. I met the person who's organizing it. It's this extreme skateboard art, including photographs of people doing skateboarding stunts at weird, amazing angles, like one of them's in a swimming pool and so on, and then there's actually art drawn on skateboards where the skateboard is the canvas.
That's pretty neat.
It is.
Want to go out of town this weekend and yet stay somewhere in the region and do something quote-unquote artistic?
Is that an invitation?
Well, the Abiquiú Studio Tour is happening in Mary Charlotte. It's a self-guided tour. There's more than 65 artists taking part in it. It's 10 to 5 tomorrow. It's 10 to 5 Sunday. There's a little story in Pasa Tiempo by moi. You can call 505-685-4454. I want to do a public service announcement for artists. You and I talk about this a lot, and I just want to do it one more time. Make sure the press releases are right. We still, in Pasa Tiempo, we're doing a really good job trying to update and make sure we have everything right. We still find phone numbers that come in wrong or times that come in wrong, and we just assume they're correct. So please make sure your PR people are doing their job and getting everything on there right. And if there's a change, just call us up so we can get it right.
Whereas Robert and I never make any mistakes.
No, despite that, sometimes we all make mistakes. So, the College of Santa Fe is starting their fall concert series, primarily because it's fall. Pillars and Tongues, they're going to be giving us ambient avant-classical folk music. It's a Chicago group. They're at the College of Santa Fe Sub, Student Union Building, 8 o'clock tonight, 1600 St. Michael's Drive. It ain't too much to get in, 473-6217. Did you hang out at the Student Union Building in your colleges when you were in college?
We didn't have a Student Union Building.
Why not?
We just didn't.
Where'd you hang out?
In the dorm, in the dining halls, in other people's rooms, in the library a lot.
Were you a party girl?
I tried to be, but it didn't. I wasn't very well suited to it.
Well, you could still start.
I know. I can have an adolescence a few years late.
They say you're nothing but a party gal. Meow Wolf's Music Showcase. Meow Wolf has moved to 1800 2nd Street.
And their new space is a trip. It's great.
Yeah, I haven't been there yet, but I will. Casavita, Troll 2, I Heart Metal, and Drowned Flowers. Don't we love the titles of these bands?
I do.
I know you do. 7 o'clock tonight. Not too much to get in. Go to myspace.com, Meow Wolf. Hey, do you have a MySpace? I never checked.
That's for me to know and you to find out.
Ooh, I'll have to go check that out and see what it says about you. I like finding out things about people I know. I've never put all that information on a website.
Well, I don't either.
I know, but still.
Everybody lies in those things anyway.
Well, they probably resuscitate the truth a little bit. Anatomy of a Symphony concert preview. This is an open orchestra rehearsal tonight at 5 o'clock that happens to be free. It's it's at St. Francis Auditorium, which is in the New Mexico Museum of Art, which is on 107 West Palace Avenue. Oliver Prezant, who's the music director, he's going to be just showing a little rehearsal, and you can go see it for free. I think there's a lecture afterwards about the music. I don't know who they're playing, but I'm willing to bet it's those classical guys who you know so well, and I can't even pronounce their names, except for Bach. And because it's fall, which is my favorite time of year, it's time for the fall scenic chairlift. You go up to the ski basin, and by checking out skisantafe.org, and from 10 to 3, you can, assuming the weather's good, you can pay to get on a round-trip chairlift. And you go to the
top. And
you
can see the aspen trees
you
and
see the aspens.
Pine trees.
Yeah. I got pinched in the aspens once.
By a bark beetle?
No, it was a cute little girl. She was, you know, a little 20-year-old co-ed. She was, for some reason, those are under the 46 inches are free. We can't mention...
Are we talking girth or height?
It says under 46 inches and 72 euros and older are no charge. Isn't that bizarre?
That is weird.
Give me a rough estimate of how tall 46 inches is. How many inches is that?
Well, it's just under... It's 3 foot 10.
Oh, so like, you know, the lollipop kids from the Munchkins could get on there.
Hey, this is opening tonight at 4:45 at the Move-In Gallery at the College of Santa Fe.
Oh.
FTWDIY, F the World, Do It Yourself, 1995 to 2004. Nicole Panter has put together an exhibition of books. It's a wide cross-section of books and other items produced by the young artists who participated in a class that she taught over many years at Cal Arts in California, and many of those young people have gone on to be artistic movers and shakers in the big world. And as part of the celebration tonight, Greg Turner, formerly from an angry Samoan, and Paul Collins will each perform short sets, and there will be refreshments and all sorts of good things. And I went over there and saw it, and we actually had her on the radio the other day, and it's awesome.
What's a Somalian got to be angry about?
Well, you know, you should go over there and find out. I think it's the name of a band.
I can't tell you what I'm going to be doing tonight.
Oh, come on, tell.
I'll tell you, but I'm not going to tell you where. I and Paul Weideman from Pasa Tiempo, with a photographer, are going into a haunted building, and we're going to spend the night there tonight. And I'm not saying where, because you'll show up and, like, put on a skeleton mask and peek in the window, because I know you. Because that's what happens. People go, let's scare the kids like Scooby-Doo.
You know me?
I know you enough to know these antics are not beyond your capability, despite your...
That's what you would do.
Your, shall we say, affluent posturing here on the show.
Oh, since when am I affluent?
You know, there's always this sense of, you know all the answers and stuff. Isn't that what affluent means?
No, affluent means you got money, which nobody has right now.
No, it's really bad, I know. I'm glad I've never had money. I'm used to it. Anyway, so that's it. And then tomorrow night, I guess I'm plugging myself here. I hope that's okay. I'm going to co-host with Allie McGraw the Barkin' Ball. It's the Barkin' 20s. Dogs are welcome.
Oh, right, the Barkin' Ball. I'm supposed to go to that.
Everyone's encouraged to dress the part, and there's going to be jazz music by Les Chat Lunatiques.
The lunatic cats,
casino,
the crazy cats.
Casino-style food and games. It's at 5:30 at the new Santa Fe Community Convention Center. Proceeds benefit, of course, the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society.
Can you bring your dog?
It says dogs welcome. That,
yay.
That's amazing to me. You think that's true?
If they say it, it's true.
Huh.
If it's in print, it's true.
983-4309. We've been talking a lot about the fall, what other things happen. Well, the fall fiesta out at Monte del Sol Charter School on Walking Rain Road. Silent auction, family activities, food concessions, noon to 5. They're out there by the community college, which is where KSFR is headquartered. So if you're out in that part of town, you want to go to a fall fiesta, it's from noon to 5. Saturday should be nice to be out there. Proceeds benefit the school. Want a phone number? 982-5225. Meanwhile, out in El Dorado, the Santa Fe Raptor Center is going to have an open house. And you can learn about the birds that are in rehabilitation. I guess they've been drinking or something. It's from 11 to 2 on Saturday on Jacinto Road in El Dorado. I'm going to give you a phone number. 699-0455.
The Baker's Wife, directed by Gail Springer, is at the Greer Garson Theater tomorrow and Sunday. Saturday at 2 o'clock and Sunday at 8 in the evening. And it's free. It's a musical direction by Ron Strauss, choreography. The Baker's Wife is a love story, almost a fable, old world charm, bread, offbeat fable of life and love and things like that. Do you know anything about it? I just got this notice last night.
It's a student production, and donations are accepted, and there's a beautiful little photo in the pasta. And the truth is, I don't know the show. I'd like to find out more about the Baker's Wife. What exactly is she baking? she's a short order cook.
I would guess bread. That's just my guess.
Well, people bake more than bread.
And it's also the baker who's baking the bread. What the wife is baking is probably what the show's about.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe she's got a little like hashish thing on the side, huh?
You said it, not me. And also, Theater Grotesco's production of Twelfth Night is being extended, and it's happening through Sunday.
8 o'clock, all
8
shows
o'clock
are 8
every
o'clock,
night.
Steeran Hall, Santa Fe Opera. See today's Pasta Tiempo for their artistic director, John Flax's, letter to the editor regarding my review of the show.
I know, very controversial, Robert.
Oh, I know, it's terrible.
Terrible.
It's good for them. It sends people up there to see them.
No publicity is bad publicity.
You're not kidding.
So, tonight at 7, from 7 to 9 o'clock at the Vintage Poster Gallery at 901 Canyon Road.
That's a great place.
It is a great place. Those film posters that they have up there are spectacular.
They're European.
Yes, they are. Polish, in fact. Join the film industry, movie, and art lovers for a party to honor the Santa Fe Film Festival. And it's a VIP invitation. And so then I said, should I announce it? And he said, of course. So everybody's a VIP. Even you, Robert.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Usually I'm COD. Here we go. The New Mexico Folk Music and Dance Society is sponsoring Contra Dance sessions regularly at the Odd Fellows Hall, 1125 Sirius Road, from 7:30 to 10:30 Saturday night. Doesn't have to be the loneliest night of the week. You can go out and dance, and you can learn everything you need to know at 7 o'clock. And Pete and Karen Sutherland play. Doc Lichtman, or Lichtman, L-I-T-C-H-M-A-N, is the caller. I guess I'll be on the phone all day soliciting donations or something. That's what they do on the KSFR show. Admission is, I can't say on the air, we're not supposed to say prices, but it ain't too bad. Check out folkmads.org or call 820-3535. Craig Smith wrote a little piece about it in today's PASA, the Contra Dance. Do you know what a Contra Dance is?
Yes. It's kind of like square dancing. It's a similar roots as square dancing.
So what kind of music do they play?
Sort of old-time fiddle Americana.
Do they sing like swing your partner do-si-do?
I think so. I haven't been to a Contra Dance since I was in college, honestly.
Oh, really? Okay. Give that guy a kiss, then don't say no. If you like Samuel Beckett, the Nobel Prize-winning author, dramatist, and teacher, who's now dead, he wrote Waiting for Godot. The guy never showed up. People keep going to see it, hoping that ending will change. It's like going to see the movie Titanic and hoping the third time maybe they'll figure out that, you know, they're not going to get off the ship.
It's like hoping that your dog won't go into your leftovers and eat them, which you meant to take home for yourself to eat, but then they go in and they eat them.
I know, and then we're mad at them.
Yeah.
Because I left the Bumblebee's chicken thing out on the counter.
I know.
And then I come home and I'm like, you! You know, I'm like one of those guys in those old 30s movies that gets the slow burn and rolls up his sleeves. You!
I oughta.
When I get my hands on you, and the dog's like, what'd I do wrong? You left it out. What was I talking about? Oh, Samuel Beckett.
That's just like Waiting for Godot.
Exactly, except there's derbies.
Except different.
So Charles Hans Winkoff, he's done a bunch of paintings inspired by Beckett's works and characters, and he's going to have a show of this stuff on Saturday, with a reception Saturday, 4 to 7. The show runs all weekend, actually. It opens today, formally, and runs through Monday, at In Art Santa Fe, which is on Delgado Street, which is off Canyon Road. It's just up Canyon a little bit, and you turn off to the left. Delgado Street, and 219 Delgado Street, 4 to 7 Saturday. He's also going to have an actor there reading some Beckett pieces. He's going to screen videos of some Beckett works, like Happy Days, and he's also going to play an audio recording of Beckett's drama Crap's Last Tape, which I never understood that play, by the way. There's refreshments, there's free black derbies for the first 30 people that show up. So it's a derby day. By the way, there's no charge for the reception, and here's the phone number, 983-6537.
Tonight at Santa Fe Complex, there is a film called Beyond Elections, Redefining Democracy in America, produced and directed by Michael Fox and Sylvia Leindecker. It's a movement toward participatory democracy in Latin America, and the film starts at 6:30, and Santa Fe Complex is on Agua Fria, and trying to scroll down here and see what the address is. Ladies and gentlemen... sorry.
That's okay. While you're looking for it, if you like trains, go to Site Santa Fe, 6 o'clock Thursday, because Sir Neil Cossons, C-O-S-S-O-N-S, will speak about Art in the Age of Steam, Europe, America, and the Railway, 1830 to 1960. And we're a rail yard town, and we're a railroad town, so we should take part in this here discussion next Thursday at 6. 989-1199. You got to pay to get in. Craig Smith wrote a really nice piece on it in today's Pasta Tiempo. Did you find the address?
Yeah, 624 and 632 Agrafria. I think it's 624 Agrafria. For more information, 216-7562.
Are we supposed to say something about SFAI today?
Yes.
Go ahead, take it away.
Well, I don't have it open.
Oh, this is okay.
I'll find it in a minute.
In the meanwhile, check out A Humble Project featuring Thomas Haddad's The Bus Drawings. Opens tonight, 6 to 8 p.m., runs through November 1st over at CCA, the Spectre Rips Project Space. Michael Abetamarco wrote a little piece about the artist, whose pen and ink on paper stuff is pretty darn interesting. 982-1338, so if you're looking for an offbeat arts opening, there you go.
And at Santa Fe Art Institute, thank you for bringing that up, Fazal Sheikh is giving a lecture at Tipton Hall on Monday at 6 o'clock, October 13th. And that is, and he is apparently an amazing photographer, born in New York City, and he traveled to Pakistan, his grandfather's birthplace, and started photographing people and relatives and survivors of the Soviet invasion. And the book chronicles his personal quest and the stories of those people whom he meets. And he's involved with human rights work. And all of this is happening as a result of the Santa Fe Art Institute's program at Tipton Hall, their Monday night lecture program. For more information, 424-5050.
Pretty good stuff. Theater work opens. Dangerous Liaisons. Mm. Everybody knows that story.
That was one of my favorite movies with John Malkovich and Glenn Close.
Man, that was terrific. Based on Christopher Hampton's play, he also wrote the screenplay. This is the play version, a little different from the movie. Opens tonight at 7:30 at James A. Little Theater, New Mexico School for the Deaf, which is on Cerritos Road by St. Francis, 471-1799.
And here's what you've all been waiting for.
Oh, boy.
Felines and Friends says, come meet some of the special kitties awaiting adoption Felines and Friends every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at Petco. An adoption advisor is available from 1 to 4 in the afternoon, and the organization is also in need of donations of food, kitty litter, and volunteers. To leave a message to volunteer, leave a message at 316-2281.
Cats are like scarier than dogs when they get mean. You're petting them and they're all like, they like being on your lap or on the pillow. Whatever they want, you have to give them. Then all of a sudden they decide they've had enough and they start going,
well, and they'll scratch your eyes out.
I know, and then they let loose and you got these big marks all over you.
Yeah, and I mean, a dog will at least just bite like a man, but cats will just go.
I know it. And then they'll come back like a minute later after they go and get their food and they're like, I'm ready to get on your lap again. I demand what's happening here.
It's messed up.
Movies. The Duchess with Keira Knightley, who I am absolutely enamored with, opens today.
Pretty girl, mediocre actress. Sorry.
You know, all the actresses I like in Hollywood, somebody's already got to say something about them. I don't know what's wrong with that.
I mean, I watched her.
I would say she's above average.
In Pirates of the Caribbean and things like that.
Come on, any woman that can wield a sword and she wears bodices and those extra clothings and stuff.
But it's kind of like a cartoon character. I saw her in Pride and Prejudice. I went through a phase last year where I watched every version of Pride and Prejudice ever made on film. And she was a really, really mediocre Elizabeth.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that, but she's in The Duchess, and it's opening today at the Vargas, and if you like her, go see that.
I'm sure it's great. Sorry.
Thank you. Appaloosa, a very solid Western. Shot here, really a good picture. Written by Robert Knott, K-N-O-T-T, not me, no relation to me. People think I wrote it. I did not, no pun intended. Starring Renee Zellweger, another actress I kind of like, even though I don't think she's that good. But it's got Ed Harris, Viggo Mortensen, who's just terrific. Really good little story. Old-fashioned black and, you know, white sort of morality to it. Couple hours long, Regal Stadium 14. But some nice twists and turns. I wrote a review of it today. It's in Pasta Tiempo, and I urge you to go see it, whether you like Westerns or Ed Harris or Vigo or Renee.
Visions of Africa, group exhibition and readings to benefit the orphans of Rwanda, 222 Shelby Street. That's this Sunday, October 12th, the reception from 2 to 4. Readings from 5 to 6 by Valerie Martinez, Mark Baer, and Deborah Casillas, and artwork by a number of artists. And it's all on Shelby Street, and don't have a phone number, but you can check it out. And I bet it's in the Pasta Tiempo.
Good. Coming down the line a little bit is the Mayor's Ball hosting the Aid and Comfort Gala. It's November 1st. It's going to be a Shakespearean masquerade. So,
cool.
Just so you know, you can get tickets at the Lensic, 988-1234. That's November 1st if you're looking forward to stuff happening then. And if you want to go up to Taos next weekend, the Storytelling Festival takes place at the Angladas Building on Kit Carson Road. 758-0081 if you like stories. Taos next weekend.
Aunt Claire is back.
Where is she? I want to meet your Aunt Claire.
Okay, Saturday, October 11th, that's tomorrow at 7:30. Prepare to be dazzled by their multi-layered alternative instrumentation and gorgeous harmonies. And it's at Body at 333 Cordova Road, pretty much across the street from where we are now. And for more information, you can go to bodyofsantafe.com or call 986-0362.
Everybody loves to go to Body sometime.
I thought you were going to say everyone loves Aunt Claire.
Everybody goes to Body somehow. Hey, what time is it?
8:49.
Thursday night, which is still a little bit away, La Teatre du Grand Guignol. Did I pronounce that right, Miss French teacher?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's the Grand Guignol Theater from Paris. Come on, your French is pretty good.
I don't speak French.
No, but they tell me that you kiss like one. I've heard through the grapevine.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
5 one-act plays. That's a compliment by French playwrights of the early 1900s. Naughty comedies to bloody dramas directed by Liam Lockhart. Very effervescent character who seems to like horror pictures. Opens Thursday night with a gala opening. And after the gala opening, it runs for a couple of weeks at the Playhouse. 142 East of Vargas, $20. I can't say prices on the air. My apologies. I can't say them. You're not supposed to. 988-4262. Call them up. But now you know the price of the gala. After that, it's cheaper.
Battle in Seattle.
Dun, 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 dun.
I have not seen this movie yet, but I am planning on going this weekend, God willing. It's at the CCA, the Center for Contemporary Arts in Santa Fe, and it's playing a number of times over the weekend, Friday through Sunday and beyond. It's playing into next week as well. And it's about what's happening, what happened in November of 1999. But it's not a documentary. It's actually a narrative movie.
That's right.
About what happened when a lot of demonstrators, thousands, took to the streets in Seattle to protest the World Trade Organization's big meeting there. And I hear it's fabulous. Have you read any reviews about it?
Jonathan Richards gave it sort of a mixed review, but he did say it was worth seeing, but he was not totally enthused, and I think his review is still running in the chili blurbs in the Pasatiempo, so take a look at that.
And Man on Wire is still there.
That's right.
And that, I love that movie.
Absolutely, and Jonathan loved that one, too.
And that's a documentary.
Sunday, Susan Boe, B-O-E. She's got an exhibit called Brave and Beautiful.
Yes, and I hope to get them on the air, but did not manage to do so. Go ahead, tell us about it.
Quite all right. It's a breast cancer Facebook. Photos by Susan of Northern New Mexico women who are living with breast cancer. There's a reception Sunday from 2 to 4, and the exhibit is going to be for the reception at the Santa Fe Women's Club, which is a great building, by the way, 1616 Old Pecos Trail, 983-9455. But then the exhibit moves to the Cancer Institute of New Mexico for a week. They're out on Zia Road, and their phone number is 955-7900. Swing by the exhibit or call one of those numbers to find out more information. And again, this is in the Pasatiempo calendar. We aim to be correct with everything. And if we're incorrect with one of your listings, call us up. And it could be our doing. And it could be, as we talked about earlier, when you don't get right press releases to us, your doing.
The Battalion Trek is visiting Santa Fe October 11th. And I believe that's tomorrow. It's a living history event. And a small encampment with authentic 19th century tents and equipment will be displayed at the LDS Church. That's the Latter-day Saints. That's a Mormon thing. The trek began on July 4th and ends in 2009. It goes from Iowa to Los Angeles, and it's a reenactment of the March of the Mormon Battalion. There's much more to say about that, but for more information, you can call 505-672-1170. Or you can go to battaliontrek.com.
A lot of people around this area know about Bill Malden, the late cartoonist who covered politics, social life in America, and certainly World War II. They may forget about Ernie Pyle, the journalist, the war journalist. He actually died during World War II in an engagement as a journalist following the troops around. But he had a connection to New Mexico, and Richard Meltzer, professor of history at the University of New Mexico, is going to be speaking about this 7:30 on Tuesday night up in Los Alamos, but it's free. 7:30 in the Pajarito Room of Fuller Lodge, which is on Central Avenue. I'm going to throw a phone number at you. 662-6277. So if you're interested in Ernie Pyle, free lecture, 7:30 Tuesday, up in Las Vegas. Que viva Las Vegas.
And tonight at Upper Crust Pizza from 6 to 9, Michael Combs will be playing fiddle, accordion, guitar, and banjo, old-timey Mexicano, Quebecois, honky-tonk, and blues no cover. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. The Glass Alliance has a New Mexico pumpkin patch if you want glass pumpkins this year. 9 to 5 today, 9 to 5 Saturday, 9 to 5 Sunday, and I do believe 9 to 5 Monday. At Lou Allen Contemporary on Palace Avenue, 129 West Palace to be specific. Proceeds benefit the Norm Dobbins Scholarship Fund. If you want to make a phone call and find out more, here we go. 424-8799. Meanwhile, the Monster Mash Halloween Drag Show. Mary Jane Sweets, Victoria Vale, Chris Alicius, and others perform at 8:30 p.m. tomorrow at the Silver Starlight Lounge, Rainbow Vision Santa Fe on Rodeo Road. Got to pay to get in. 428-7781. I love that song, the Monster Mash. I should start playing that on the radio now. I haven't heard it yet. It's very disappointing.
That's up there with, like, the really bad songs of the 70s, isn't it?
No, it's not up there. Who put it up there? Hands on the list. You always rearrange all my cultural specifications.
Oh, it's great. It's a great song.
Adamications. I'm always trying to...
It's musically sophisticated, and the lyrics will rock your world.
You know, like Keira Knightley, you don't like Monster Mash. I don't even want to ask what you think of Ursula Andress.
Who?
She's like the best actress from Europe ever.
Now, there's a lot of great, great, great actors and actresses. I just don't think Keira Knightley is one of them. But you do, so that's great. You know, there's a variety. It takes all kinds. Monday night at the Lenzic, Marsalis Brasilianos, Hector Villalobos' 50th anniversary, Branford Marsalis on saxophone and the Filarmonia Brasileira. And that's Monday, October 13th at 7:30 at the Lenzic. And for more information, let's see, that's the Santa Fe Concert Association, and you can call the Lenzic for tickets, 988-1234. And, of course, Peter Bull, Pacific Northwest Dance
that's
Company.
That's right, you had him on earlier.
I had him on earlier. And, well, I mean, I have a particular soft spot for ballet, but it looks like it's going to be a really wonderful two nights of ballet at the Lenzic. So if you want to see world-class ballet from the Pacific Northwest, but he's a New York City guy, check it out.
Some girlfriend of mine took me to the ballet like 25 years ago in Tucson.
Can you say more about that?
I think they did the Nutcracker. I haven't been back since.
That's a great story, Robert.
Well, thank you. No, I've gone to see some of Aspen Santa Fe's work, believe me, so. It just threw me. Oh, All Ages Swing Dance, Monday night, Odd Fellows Hall, another free thing to learn. 8 o'clock is a lesson, 9 o'clock they dance. Not too expensive to get in. Go on up there. The Scatolites, Jamaica's first family of ska, is going to be playing their music 7:30 Tuesday at the Santa Fe Brewing Company. 988-1234. Santa Fe Farmers Market's opening their new digs at 1607 Paseo de Parata. They open at 7 o'clock Tuesday. Head on down there. They are no longer down on the other side of town. You know, they used to do the Saturdays at the Via Linda Mall. They're not there now. Warehouse 21 has a metal showcase Wednesday night. Casavito, Wolves in the Throne Room, This Day's Light, and a group called Natch Mystium. 6 o'clock, Warehouse 21, Wednesday night. 989-4423. And at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture on Wednesday, it's Let's Take a Look. You bring in your Native American artifacts, and they'll identify them for you.
Oh, wow.
Noon to 2, it's free, but you do have to, it says museum admission applies, so how can that be free? I guess you got to pay the museum price, but then you get in to see the museum. There's a lot of good museums you should
go to. But you don't have to pay to have your objects assessed.
No, you don't. Do you have any Native American artifacts?
Not that I know of.
Me either. You know what I have? It was like one of those great trolls from the 60s that my aunt gave me. Remember those trolls with the long hair that were really cool? Mine's dressed up like a pirate. Speaking of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Speaking of Keira Knightley.
I would love to speak of Keira Knightley. Why doesn't she come to New Mexico to make a movie?
I don't know. Why don't you ask her?
Like I have that kind of sway. Is
and
that the intro music or the outro
music?
Yeah, but I was going to...
Go ahead.
I was just going to do a little dance.
Oh, go ahead and do a little dance. You can dance to Francisco Guabella.
And, I think I'll sing Everybody Loves Somebody sometime.
And this song is called Shirley's Guaguancó.
Shirley's what?
Guaguancó.
Well, she ought to go see a doctor about that. I did. Some penicillin cleared it right up.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR's stream is live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also but email is better because I don't always check that message machine. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. And you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. And some people actually do that, and then they can put it in their iPod and everything.
Look at that lady over there on that skateboard.
Yeah, there's a lady on a skateboard. She's not really there. It's a representation. It's a black and white painting. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz a la carta.
You got it.
Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. Robert Knott is the associate editor of the Paso Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's a terrific writer, actor, man about town, and...
Tonight I'm going to be a ghost hunter.
And ghost hunter.
What happens if I don't come back? Will you get somebody else on the show?
Yeah. No, we'll use your ghost. Duh. We'll get your ghost in on the microphone.
You're getting my goat every time I come on air. You may as well get my ghost. I wonder who this artist is, skateboard artist at Santa Fe Baking Company. Come down and look.
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting work.
I have to agree.
Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte.
I know that.
And Robert Knott is here with us. And we love him just the way
I'm off he is. Next week.
You're off
Rob
next DeWalt
week? Rob DeWalt will be here.
Oh, good.
But I'll be back
Rob
the following
DeWalt.
Couple weeks. I'm on vacation, but in town.
Oh, okay. Well, we look forward to having you back, and okay. We look forward to seeing you on vacation, relaxing, and having a wonderful time, whatever you're doing, hunting ghosts and otherwise.
Thank you.
Hasta la vista.
I'll see you around, kiddo.
Ciao.